what have we been talking for the last few months? That I have hardly begun.
Layout of the yoga sutra.
Well, we talked about the land of ignorance. The land of ignorance. The entire universe, the physical universe, the astral or the molecular universe, the mental or the electronic, atomic universe, all put together, they form what in our term we call Brahman, the egg of Brahma. This entire Brahman is the land of ignorance. There is much knowledge in this land of ignorance. Is useless. The knowledge that can guide us in this land of ignorance, we don't have. Religions talk about so many things, but since they do not categorically mention about a very important subject, they are known as faiths. We believe them because somebody said it and we respect that somebody. Philosophies don't state, and that is why we call them philosophies. The most important aspect in this land of ignorance is the period after death in one life, the birth in the next, and the interim period between death and birth. Nobody talks on this subject categorically. If this knowledge is not available, whatever knowledge we have is ignorance. Because all our religion, all our philosophies are based on something we don't know. We have to take for granted. Three countries in the world, Egypt, Tibet and India, practically mastered this subject. The pharaohs of Egypt took the knowledge into the pyramids, and that knowledge is no more available there. In Tibet, that knowledge disappeared about 100 years ago. In India, that knowledge has gone underground, as we say it. They call it Gupta Vidya. And this Gupta Vidya is not given up easily to seekers unless he qualifies specially. Therefore, this knowledge, if it doesn't come to you by word of mouth, and by certain practices you do not experience it, the rest of your knowledge is ignorance. Am I clear? If there are any writings left behind, it is Yoga Sutra of sage Patanjali, and it has become also Gupta Vidya because it is not arranged properly. A, it is not explained in detail in Sanskrit. C, those who are translated have not translated from experience, so it has become Gupta Vidya also. though it is printed in black and white. Whatever be the moving power behind religion or philosophy, one can't understand this knowledge by reading or by mere hearing. It requires a lot of hard work, and that is covered under the term practices. Today we have had 3-4 talks earlier on this land of ignorance. Today we shall have the last installment on this land of ignorance. Then we have to go in to understand practically and philosophically what the Yoga Sutras wish to tell us. Will you kindly? This is creation. This is existence. It's not separate from creation, as it is shown here. It is magnified so that it is clear. It is actually here. You can see it, it's actually here. It therefore means that if we are not here and if we are here, we are in exile. We are in exile. If we are in exile, why are we driven away from our homeland? If we are in exile, why are we driven away from our homeland?
To learn.
Yeah. But we could be taught there. It so happens here in this perfect land of existence, there is no possibility of sin. There is no possibility of sin. To trespass, there is no possibility. We are all very good people. And life becomes dull when we are too good and not a little naughty. If we don't trespass, if we commit no sin and are always good, in the long run it becomes dull. Ages after ages. So a thought may come. Is there no other way to live? And those who get this thought, whether there is another way to live, are sent into existence. A very interesting, exciting, expecting life where they can trespass and where they can learn, and wherever and whenever they want to come back, they can come back. So that's the whole trouble. If you are all in heaven for 500 years, you will all like to come back to earth. Because you won't be able to do anything worthwhile. You will always be good. And without a little trespass, without a little spice to life, life becomes boring. So, we are sent out of this land into exile. After coming into exile, we realize that it is a little more than what we asked for. And now we think of going back. We have a faint idea that we have a home where there is all happiness. And that faint idea is now forcing us to retrace our steps back home. But those who have retraced their steps back home are not here now. So who will guide us to take those steps back home? So once in a way, a Buddha is born. Once in a way, Christ is born to tell us that, look, I also did that mistake, I have gone back. If you want to come back, come, I'll show you how to go back. That's how Christ and Buddha and the like of them, you see, are telling us how to trace our steps back home. Understand? One of them was sage Patanjali. He was kinder even than Buddha or Christ. He said, let me write it down at least so that people might read and think of these. And his accepted disciples were given all the necessary experience, and they by word of mouth have carried on till today. What I have received is also by word of mouth, and what you will receive is also by word of mouth. But a very big but comes in. That will not help unless you go through the practices. The practices are essential because basically a human being, and when I say a human being, I don't talk about this external form. A human being as he is a being. I'm not using the word soul or spirit. A human being as he is a being. Your real you. Is structured in such a way that a little guidance, a few practices, and the real you will separate from these coverings easily. These coverings can't enter creation. They are the product of existence. But your real you is a product of creation. And if that real you were to give up this covering, it is at liberty to step into its celestial home, creation. Understand? Am I clear? So there is a little talk about this covering. And the sooner we can throw away these coverings, we can be free to return back home. But you cannot commit suicide and say, well, I have thrown away my covering. Then you will remain here only. The covering must be discarded consciously through practices after experiencing certain higher knowledge and possibilities. Am I clear? Shall we read? Oh, in the last meeting, not last month's meeting, in the last meeting, we realized that we were in the land of ignorance or the land of illusions. We also noted that it does not mean that what we see is illusion. What is the best way to find out that what we see is not illusion? To bang your head against the wall. That's the easiest way to find out whether you are actually experiencing illusion. So you are not experiencing illusion, but you are in the land of ignorance. We also noted that it does not mean that what we see is illusory, but whatever we see, we do not get to the right meaning, and give importance to such that does not deserve importance, or we simply ignore that which requires our attention and so live a meaningless life leading to meaningless results. Due to such wrong approach, we are miserable and find hindrances and obstacles coming our way, and for that we find no real solution and are thus made unhappy. The main or absolute mistake we make is that we are convinced we can gather knowledge with the help of the brain instead of knowing whatever we want to know from within ourselves. We also superimpose the functions and possibilities of the brain over mind and think that the brain is able to guide us. We are unaware of the vastness of the mind and the immense possibilities of mind compared to functions of the brain which are limited. We are repeating these thoughts because they have to sink deep in our awareness. The brain of man, perhaps, is the finest creation in the universe. But, like your lungs, like your heart, like your kidney, it is only an organ. It cannot function by itself or keep functioning. If you do not supply electricity to the best computer, the computer is silent. It does nothing. What is electricity, we don't know. We know the effects of electricity all over. What is electricity, we don't know. What are the effects of the mind on the brain, we know. We don't know what is mind. Brain can be an individual organ in each human being. A mind is a shoreless ocean. Such a mighty ocean that all the three universes float in it. The sastras call mind chitti. There is nothing opaque, there is nothing insurmountable, there is nothing impenetrable for the mind to penetrate. It can penetrate everything. It can penetrate all the three universes. It can penetrate any hard substance. And so it can penetrate our body and our mind and our brain. It penetrates our body and our brain. When it penetrates our brain and makes our brain function, we so many times senselessly, not sensibly, say, my mind. If the air in the atmosphere in your lungs becomes my breath, which is not yours, the mind which flows to your brain is not my mind, it is the mind, the infinite mind. But we human beings like to possess everything. Everything is mine. So my breath, my mind, they don't belong to us. Food that we eat, air that we breathe, mind that flows, do not belong to us. They come from outside into us. And likewise, whatever knowledge that comes outside, from outside into us, does not belong to us. We are mere parrots repeating it. Clear? So this vast mind, it has its own potential. It is able to do a lot of things. What the best of brains cannot. And if we are content with what the brain can do, we will never know what the mind can do. And if humbly, very humbly, if we start knowing what the mind can do, tomorrow very humbly we will accept what your real you can do. Understand? Because your real you is far superior even to the mind, the infinite mind. So let us be clear in our approach to this subject. The brain, the mind, and your real you. If you are content with your brain, let's close the chapter here. If you are content with the mind, you will have to close the chapter tomorrow. But if you are not satisfied with either the brain or the mind, then there is hope to know the real you as you are. You are your real you. Your real you needs no education. Your real you needs no wisdom. Your real you does not need yoga. Your real you does not need Yoga Sutra of Patanjali. But on the way you need, yes?
It does not need also the brain and the body?
It does not need the brain and the body. It does not need the infinite mind. And therefore, it is very essential that we know or we try to know what is the real you. Is that clear? We do not use the word soul. We do not use the word spirit. For we have read so much and our mind and brains are so confused that we will bring some meaning into it again. We want to keep all known meanings out. So if we are in search of the real you, or should I put it the other way around, that the real you is trying to say, please, for God's sake, let me be free from all your wisdom and all your education. It's telling us daily, please let me be free. But we in our wisdom say, oh, be inside, I'm taking care of you, be inside. As if we know so much, you see. That is why I say we are living in the land of ignorance. Let's go further. Even brain as it is, we are now discovering that the unconscious part of the brain is vastly superior to the conscious part of the brain, yet we are impressed only by the functions of the conscious brain only. The brain can be roughly divided into the front brain, the rear brain, the right brain, the left brain. We all talk. You and the scientists talk. We don't know really what we mean by the front brain and the rear brain. There is no kitchen here, there is no sitting room here. Yet we say this is the forebrain, this is the hind brain, this is the right brain, this is the left brain. And if you are lefty, this is your right brain, this is your left brain. This is all talk. There are 16 billion cells in this gray matter. We don't know 10,000 of them. The best of human knowledge cannot discover or talk about or know about more than 10,000 of them. There are 16 billion cells that forms our universe. They say that there are 16 billion galaxies in the universe, and each galaxy has 16 billion stars. I don't know why the 16 billion figure is somewhere. nice to make 16 billion pounds or something. So what were we talking about? Yes. The front brain is supposed to be the conscious brain. When you are awake, all your thinking goes around here. That is why it is the conscious brain. When you sleep, it has to rest. It does not necessarily rest, it has to rest. And when it rests, you sleep. Or when you sleep, it rests. Or perhaps I should say that it neither rests nor do you sleep. Because in your sleep you dream. In your dream is a mixture of many things you want to do, you have done, you would like to do, and what not. So actually, even in your sleep, this is not silent. They say that all our habits, human habits, are in the unconscious brain. Whatever we do unconsciously is a habit. If for the whole year you put your soap box here, suddenly you have changed and put it there, perhaps for 2 days you will come here. That is your subconscious brain working and bringing you here. But the mind is far too superior. Even then, what we talk about the subconscious brain. They say that in the subconscious, if you are trained, you can be a genius. And there are practices of auto-hypnosis or self-hypnosis, where you induce sleep on yourself with certain pre-thought, pre-understood statements. It is a science by itself. Instead of going to such details, why not go first to the mind, the infinite mind, and know its possibility and how it can guide the brain. It will give you sufficient information then to take the next step, namely discarding your outer coverings and see your own real you. The conscious part of the brain, with the conscious part of the brain, we think. In all lower life also, this thinking for day-to-day living is possible. Remember, we pride that a human being is a human being because he can think. But thinking is the most elementary process of brain. Thinking is the most elementary process of brain. And if you cannot do anything more than thinking, it's a sad day for us. Is that my point? We pride ourselves that we can think, and that is why we are human beings. But thinking, the very process of thinking, is the lowest, most crude, most simple process that the brain can do. And yet we are totally satisfied. Aurobindo in 3 lines writes beautifully about this. An incurable littleness pursues its days. Ever since consciousness was born on earth, life is the same in insect, ape and man. Do you get to the meaning of it now? The incurable littleness, our day-to-day living is summed up by incurable littleness. And it is from when? Ever since consciousness was born on earth, man appeared on earth 4 billion years ago. Since then till today, this incurable littleness has not left us. Incurable littleness. You might be a doctor, might be an engineer, might be a scientist, and suddenly, oh, he said that. Oh, if he said that, what? If he called you a fool, so what? You may be a fool, it's all right. But no, his incurable littleness, and he is up, furious. His littleness will not tolerate why he was called a fool, you see. And for men, since consciousness was born on earth, 4 billion BC, when man first appeared on this earth, from that day, this incurable littleness is with us. It is our best possession, incurable littleness. What we call in another word, ego. Our incurable littleness. We may be 5 foot something, our ego may be 5 miles something. You see? And that incurable littleness cannot stand this much of an insult. And so he says, life is the same in insect, ape and man. Don't get insulted. I am also included. This structure, this creature, meaning man, this creature, passionate only to survive, he only wants to live, fettered to punny thoughts with no wide range, and to the body's needs and pangs and joys. Finish. There his whole world ends. His incurable littleness ends and begins in this much. And he is the same with ape, insect and man. Now if this is our state today, as it was 4 million BC, why should we talk big about God and about soul and about this and about that, if we cannot cure this incurable littleness, if our consciousness cannot go beyond what it was 4 million BC? This is what is important, that we should make good here. We must cure our incurable littleness and not be same with insect and ape. We'll go further. This function of the conscious part of the brain, that is thinking, is the lowest capacity of the brain, and these two the conscious brain is not able to do without the help of the mind. This fact till recently has remained unknown and is not properly even known today in the scientific world. Remember this, the higher functions of inspiration, intuition, perception and finally just knowing are beyond the capacity of the conscious brain. You understand clearly now? The best of human brain cannot indulge into these four aspects. The higher functions of inspiration, intuition, perception and just knowing. These are the functions of the mind. We always say, oh, he is an inspired soul. That means he is able consciously or unconsciously to tune his conscious brain to the infinite mind. And so we call him an inspired soul. He is a genius. A Mozart is born once in 10,000 years perhaps. Leonardo da Vinci maybe once in 10,000 years. You see? And we call them inspired beings. Poets, we call them inspired beings. You see? But they are rare, so rare. The rest of us, we live with our littleness. There our world ends. You get my point? Even if you just touch the first phase is inspiration, no? Yes, the first phase is inspiration. And you become somebody different from the enormous crowd. If you take the next step, intuition, and if you take the next step, perception, and finally if you take the step of just knowing, you could be miles, light years away from what you are now. All these is with the help of the mind. These four functions are the functions of the brain. Is that clear? All we have to learn is how we can synchronize the conscious part of the brain with the infinite mind that flows to us every moment of our living. Fortunately, not for a second this infinite mind stops flowing to us. Not only there is a huge brain here, but there are small minor brains all over the body, because at night we are supposed to cut off here so that nothing goes here and the body can rest. And the body is maintained during sleep by those minor brains. So there are brains all over the body. There is a big brain here. All are useless, all are incapable unless to some degree they can go inside, connect themselves to the infinite mind. You get my point? Even for mere day-to-day living, it is necessary to connect in some manner. But for these four higher functions, there are special methods. That is why we need practices. Otherwise, there is no need of practices. But because the brain by itself cannot have these four functions. It can through infinite mind. The thinking that is possible is not even correct, because it is influenced by memory, soaked in past experience, emotions, and is therefore distorted, and correct thinking without the help of memory is not possible. This is the very process of thinking. There are different aspects of thinking. There are different links to thinking. Thinking requires A, memory. B, incoming impulses. Both together they go to the forebrain, where there are four centers: intellectual, emotion, sex and movement. There the thought is completed, given a picture, and on that picture we act. If we have no memory, when we see a person lying in bed and we say, oh, he is a vegetable, we mean his memory has ceased to influence. He cannot recognize anything. Without memory, we become vegetable. So memory in thinking is necessary. But memory, meaning if I meet you and I recognize you, meaning I have seen you before and I have a memory of what I had seen. If I have not seen you before and if I meet you, may I know your name? We ask that. Or who are you? Or something. Memory has to be formed to know and like to go further. But memory has past memory. Past memory means past emotions, experience. Past emotions may be good, may be bad. And therefore, our today's thinking is influenced by past memory, good or bad. If it is good, we overlook weaknesses. If it is bad, we even suspect goodness. So, memory distorts our thinking. You get my point? Memory distorts thinking. So, one thing on which you can depend on the brain is thinking. That thinking is distorted. That thinking cannot take place without the influence of mind. So where are you? And where is your brain? Nothing. You can't depend. We go further. Again the poet writes, his little pleasures punctuate the frequent griefs. The griefs are frequent. His pleasures are little. And they only punctuate like comma and full stop. Hardship and toil are the heavy price he pays. Now, and that is in the middle of the sentence, put in the beginning. And for the right to live, his last wage is death. That's all your life. His little pleasures punctuate the frequent griefs. Hardship and toil are the heavy price he pays. And for the right to live, his last wage is death. This is all we live for normally. Our incurable littleness. So Yoga Sutra is here to guide us in the right direction. If we take the proper guidance, we shall be able to live totally on a different plane of existence. There is no miracle suggested here. This is practical and achievable. It is study with practices that will clarify our thinking and then introduce the higher functions of the mind to the brain. And we shall be able to live a better type of life with better quality and texture. That is, our living will be human and will tend to be superhuman. Because of the improper use of the brain and the interference of memory, we are not normally able to live our life as per yoga abhyasa. In Book 1, Sutra 13, it says, the obstacles to soul cognition, that means the obstacles that prevent us from knowing the real you, are bodily disability, mental inertia, wrong questioning, carelessness, laziness, lack of dispassion, erroneous perception, inability to achieve concentration, failure to hold the meditative attitude when achieved. Now, if these are the obstacles, let us see them again. The obstacles to soul cognition are bodily disability. Health is therefore absolutely required. Health is therefore absolutely required. Health meaning physical, mental, emotional, psychic. Not only physical, because there are brutes of man who are very strong and physically perfect, but they have no mental health, they have no emotional health, they have no psychic health. A Bengal tiger is a beauty to be seen. It's in perfect health, tremendous power. It is said that if you have an iron rod 4 inches in diameter, with one stroke of his paw, the Bengal tiger can break that rod into two. Such is its strength, such is its beauty when it walks. But it's a brute. It has no emotional health, it has no mental health, it has no psychic health. So when you are healthy, you must be physically healthy, mentally healthy, emotionally healthy, psychically healthy. You get my point? Otherwise, in your progress, this type of ill health, or any one of these, will come in your way and will prevent your sadhana, which is very important. You should not break your sadhana day to day. Then the next one is mental inertia. No, I will do it tomorrow. Tomorrow I will definitely do it. And tomorrow it never ends. Mental inertia. Why? Mental inertia comes from mental ill health. Why mental ill health? Because this factory of yours works over time. You are supposed to work 8 hours. The shift is 8 hours. You ask your workers even to work 8 hours. This poor thing works 24 hours. And because it is overworked, it suffers from mental health. And then comes mental inertia. Remember that whenever you say, oh, I'll do it afterwards, it's a sure sign that you have abused your mental capability. You have been thinking and thinking and thinking, and God knows what you have been doing, you see. That is the reason for mental inertia, because you are tired mentally. Wrong questioning. If you are a little child, holding a little finger and going up, it never stops questioning. Why is it like this? Why it is like this? Why it is not like this? And then you say, please, now, keep quiet for a little while, you see. Because we think it is wrong questioning. But after going up, we still ask wrong questions. Wrong questioning is a sign of ignorance. Today also we ask so many questions, and it's a sign of ignorance. Wrong question. Why did not God create a perfect world? One of the wrong questions. carelessness, laziness also go with mental inertia. Carelessness, laziness, lack of dispassion, lack of dispassion. I just now told you that in heaven there is no spice. In existence there is so much spice. You can zest us and